Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Holistic Matters podcast. This is the Holistic Approach to Pet Care, and I'm here with certified veterinary technician Jody Griffiths.
Hello to all of our veterinary professionals and pet parents. Thank you for joining us for our final episode. Today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Madeline Yamate about geriatric and older dogs and the special care that they require. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I'm super excited because today we are going to be focusing on our geriatric patients. Our guest today is Dr. Madeline Yamate. She is an integrative veterinarian out of California. She's a wealth of information when it comes to thinking about our geriatric cats and dogs. And so often we think of age as a number, but there are lots of ways that we can be supporting these patients. And so, Madeline, I'm going to turn it over to you if you want to introduce yourself.
Oh, great. Well, as Jody said, I'm an integrative veterinarian. My practice is primarily traditional Chinese medicine, so acupuncture, Chinese herbal, Chinese food therapy. We do a little bit of Tui Na, and then also we do a lot of laser. Also, we can't legally call it chiropractic in California, so we have to call it musculoskeletal manipulation, manual musculoskeletal manipulation, but we do hands-on for that. And some other alternative modalities as well. But my practice is heavily geriatric and senior, simply because oftentimes people kind of wait until the bitter end to come and see us. But I love practicing this way with our older dogs and cats.
Wonderful. So let's start out by laying some groundwork. What is the difference between a senior pet and a geriatric pet?
So there's actually no definitive, you know, senior versus geriatric. But in general, we kind of consider a senior dog to be healthy, but exhibiting some clinical signs of aging. The American Animal Hospital Association says in dogs, they consider senior to be the last 25% of estimated lifespan through the end of life. While with cats, it's going to be greater than 10 years of age. Geriatrics are then considered to be older, but having more health-related problems. So according to the American Veterinary Medical Association, they felt that cats and small dogs are considered geriatric at 7 years of age or 6 years of age for a large breed dog. For me, that was, you know, I think that's kind of pulling that plug a little bit early. And there was no differentiation in the AVMA site for senior and geriatric. But to me, geriatric is going to be my older patients that actually have more health-related problems. Because I have plenty of quote-unquote senior dogs that are quite lively and active. My own dogs have always been that way as well. So I kind of prefer senior being older and healthier and geriatric being, you know, maybe a little bit more fragile, maybe a little bit older, but also having some more clinical signs of aging.
And I think this is super interesting because honestly, I was not aware of this differentiation. I tend to use the term senior and geriatrically kind of hand in hand. And so now moving forward, every time I'm talking about our older animals, I am going to be thinking about you because I'm going to be thinking, okay, is this a senior or is this a geriatric? So I think that's super awesome. When we're talking about the size of our pets, does that play a factor in when they're considered senior versus geriatric?
Yes, it does. So although we don't have a hard and fast rule for specific size or body weight, and when they're considered senior and geriatric, you can look up charts all over the internet and you'll find a fairly large range. But, you know, I think it's pretty reasonable to say for cats and small dogs that are 0 to 20 pounds, they would be considered senior at about 10 years of age and then geriatric at 14. And then our medium, a small to medium dogs at 20 to 50 pounds would be senior at around 9 years of age and geriatric at 13. And then our larger dogs at about 50 to 90 pounds would be considered senior at 8 and geriatric at 11. And then our giant dogs that are going to be greater than 90 pounds would be considered seniors at 7 and geriatric at 10. But I would say that, again, we need to consider that there's a lot of factors besides just size. It's also going to be that genetics are going to play into fact. Have a factor. The dog's lifestyle is also going to play a big part because I see plenty of dogs that are over 90 pounds that even at 10 are still running. My own dogs that typically weigh 95 to 100 and some odd plus pounds at 10 years of age, they were still running vigorously, you know, for an hour with me. So it really depends upon lifestyle, genetics, how we feed our dogs, how much exercise they get, and all sorts of other factors.
I so agree, because I have young dogs and they're labs, and we mm-hmm. have friends that have labs, and our dogs look so much younger than our friends' dogs that are about the same age. And I truly feel that the way that we feed our dogs is a big factor in that, because we feed them differently than many people feed their dogs. And so I think that definitely plays a huge role. You know, my kids are always asking me, so how old are our dogs now in people years? And so what is the difference? I mean, how can you explain the difference between people years and dog years?
So the way I look at it is that, you know, we look at a year is 365 or, you know, leap year, you know, one extra day, right? We look at that and go, like, I'm like 60 years old. But for a dog that's 1 year of age, they're not the equivalent of a one-year-old infant. And so, you know, the old standard used to be like for every one year of life a dog lives, it's the equivalent of about 7 years, right? And we found that that's no longer true. There's a great little equation that came out, I think, about a year or so ago that you can plug into, and then it tells you like how old your dog actually is in relative to human years. So, for example, a 10-year-old dog is not going to be like a 10-year-old child, right? So to do the old estimate, we would say my 10-year-old dog is like a 70-year-old person. So that's how I explain it. I think it's kind of funny, because I will have to say, once somebody came in and said, my dog is 10. And I'm like, oh my gosh, your dog looks great. And the dog was maybe about a little bit over a year. She was, you know, using that conversion chart. And so I was like, wow, your dog is so vital. There's like no gray hair. So that's what she was using. So yeah, we can't unfortunately go, yeah, my 2-year-old dog is like a 2-year-old child. Sadly, they age much faster.
Okay, that makes sense. So when we're talking about aging, tell mm-hmm. me a little bit about how you would describe aging as a physiological process.
Well, one thing to remember is that we kind of are pre-programmed to die, right? Like our cells are programmed to die anyway. And with aging, cells are going to be destroyed faster than they can regenerate. And that affects our organ systems, right? Are they able to still function appropriately? Do they have the same functional capacity? The thing to also remember is that we don't have the same homeostatic mechanisms. They're just not working as well. So we can't respond as well to any kind of stresses, be they internal or external. And we also know that our immune system does decline with age for all living beings. And so as we age, we're going to have an increased vulnerability to disease. The other thing I think is important is that we also have impaired circulation. And I see that a lot with my older, you know, animal patients. Sometimes you can even feel cooler feet. We can see it in terms of cerebral, you know, brain circulation. Maybe they're not, their brains are kind of persistently hypoxic, meaning not getting enough oxygen. And so they're not responding as fast, or maybe the cognitive function is also slower. So there's a lot of organ systems and body systems that just are no longer functioning to their prime.
What are some of the factors that influence that?
There are a lot of factors. Obviously, genetics is going to affect it. Size of the dogs and cats, like we just spoke about, even breed can affect lifespan. You know, we have animals that perhaps are not as well equipped physiologically to deal with some of the environmental stressors. So, I mean, what comes to mind is sadly some of our brachycephalics. Lifestyle and environment are huge as well. So you have a dog or cat that doesn't really have a lot of environmental stimulation or a lot of, you know, people interaction, that's going to definitely, you know, affect their both quality of life and quantity of life. If you also have an animal that's in an inappropriate environment. So I always think about my poor little, you know, Pit, who when we took her up to the snow, she loved it, but, you know, it was cold. It was harder for her. Whereas my northern breeds were just loving being in the snow. So we have situations like that. Nutrition to me is huge, absolutely huge. To me, nutrition, diet is at the foundation of all health and vitality. And so if an animal is getting an inappropriate diet or an inappropriate amount, be it either too much or too little, that will affect aging. And then body condition score. So Purina did a great lifespan longevity study using, you know, body weight as the parameter that they were focusing on. And they did find that when we keep our animals leaner lifelong, they will live longer. I think that's a really important study that they were able to show us. So I always tell my clients, the one and only thing we can do to have our animals living longer is to keep them at an appropriate body condition score.
Which is, we see so many obese animals nowadays that I think some people really celebrate when they have their animals live into their teens or upper teens or maybe even into the 20s. But I mean, really, they should be living that long if they're fed properly and if they're well taken care of, and hopefully genetics are on their side. And so I think, unfortunately, in this day and age, we see so much obesity that I think, unfortunately, we're losing a lot of our animals at a much earlier age than we could be. What are some of the age-related changes that pet parents can expect to be seeing in their cats and dogs?
Well, the AMA says the common senior pet diseases are going to be cancer, heart disease, kidney urinary tract disease. So things like urinary tract infections, or in cats, maybe, you know, they'll have the sterile cystitis, liver disease, diabetes, joint or bone disease, basically meaning arthritis, senility, and weakness. And that's what the AVMA had listed on, you know, on their website. But what I see commonly, like arthritis is definitely something that we see a lot, and not even necessarily in senior and geriatric patients. Behavior changes are huge. We're seeing a lot more cognitive dysfunction, and I don't know whether or not it's because people are noticing it more and we're also better informed about the signs of canine cognitive dysfunction, or whether it's also just a factor of our animals are living longer. We'll also see inappropriate urination and defecation, and you have to determine whether or not that's a behavior issue or whether it's a physiological issue where it's actually truly incontinent. I see a lot of cancer in my practice. Again, you know, hard to say whether it's just because we see older animals or whether there are more factors in our lives today that promote cancer. Dental, oral disease, huge in our older animals. Same thing with humans. And, you know, I think it's really wonderful that people are becoming more cognizant of oral care, brushing teeth, and taking care of, you know, the whole periodontal issues. We also see a lot of endocrinopathy. So things like hyperadrenocorticism, diabetes, either hyper or hypothyroidism, a lot of gastrointestinal issues, inappetence. I see that a lot in my older patients. It's kind of a challenge because sometimes it's, people will say, well, my dog won't eat breakfast, but it'll eat dinner. And I'm like, that's fine. Or feed them brunch. Again, we already talked about incontinence, both fecal and or urinary. I think our older animals are more prone to infection. So, you know, skin problems like pyoderma, urinary tract infections. And some of that, you know, is it also because they're not as mobile? So is it that, you know, they are lying down on the, you know, lying down more, and so their skin is more susceptible to infections, urinary tract infections? Well, again, mobility may be being an issue. And so they're not going out to potty enough, and now they're getting urinary tract infections. Of course, we'll see our typical heart, kidney, and liver disease. So as we age, our organ systems age and don't have the same functionability, and they don't have the same organ capacity. Sensory deficits, so they may have impaired vision, hearing. We see that, we hear that a lot, that their dogs aren't hearing as well. Maybe also the smelling issue. So perhaps the decreased ability to detect odors is contributing to the fact that they're inappetent. But I think the thing that we see a lot is that those mobility issues, the weakness, the hind end weakness especially, and the instability. So those are what I would say we see a lot of, and I'm sure, you know, both Western and alternative vets see the same things.
Talking about cognitive decline, give me some of the classic signs of it. I mean, how do you diagnose that?
It's hard to actually definitively diagnose unless you have some of our great ability, like Dr. Kurt Stewart, who's a neurologist, wrote a really interesting article about cognitive dysfunction. And he talks more about the neuropathophysiology of it. But for me, I kind of tell my clients, because, you know, we all pretty much are learning about Alzheimer's, right? As we get older, you know, we inevitably have parents or other relatives or friends that have Alzheimer's or, you know, dementia. And so I'll tell people it's kind of like doggy dementia, or it can be as subtle as like, oh my gosh, where did I put my keys? And, you know, people kind of get that where, you know, they'll say that, do you see your dog kind of staring off into the space or maybe pacing? And cats, same thing. It's like they kind of like meow, 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 and like for no reason. And they'll look like they're crying for me, but I'm right there. So things like that. I'll just say that those are some of the signs. They can also be disruption in behavior. So all of a sudden they're up at night pacing versus, you know, sleeping at night. It can be inappropriate urination, defecation, kind of like oh, I have to go potty, I'll just go here. So those are some of the things that I'll tell my clients to look at. And sometimes I just tell my clients, it may be like somebody kind of pulled the shades down, right? So it's kind of like, they're not bright eyed and vibrant. It's just kind of like, oh, I'm a little hazy. Like I just woke up, but I've been awake for hours. So those are kind of like the vague signs I'll tell them. And then we'll go through the behavior changes we're seeing. And then we might try some supplements. In some cases, you know, some people might want to reach for drugs. It depends upon what your practitioner is comfortable and familiar with. And then, you know, we move on from there. I will say that in general, my patients will respond fairly strongly to whatever treatment that we give to them. But one of the things I think is really important is you can't just give them medication or supplements. You have to also provide mental stimulus for them. And so you have to interact with them. You have to take them for walks. You have to give them things that are interesting. So try and get things that are interesting to smell, you know, interesting to play with, different scents and terrain. So I tell people, even if you take your dog for the same walk every day, try different times of day. Morning smells are very different from evening smells, and you're still stimulating the brain when you take them to the same place, but a different time of day, and they're smelling different things.
So interesting. When you have seniors coming in, does your exam look any different for a senior animal than it does for a younger animal? Or is there any routine practices that you're doing for the seniors that you're not necessarily doing for the younger dogs or cats?
I would say, because I do, when, you know, as I said, we're an integrative facility. So I do a full Western exam. I also do a traditional Chinese medicine exam because I am trained in veterinary spinal manipulation. I'll also do a what would be considered a chiropractic exam. And so I check all those things. I will say for my senior or in geriatrics, depending upon their health status, I may not do quite as comprehensive of a physical orthopedic exam simply because that's a lot of neurological stimulation. We do give our dogs a lot of breaks because, you know, we try and be as low stress as possible. So if I have a young dog that's starting to get a little stressed out, I'll stop and we'll do something different and we'll talk and play and maybe give some treats. So I just say, you know, we might have to go a little bit slower with my geriatrics just because they're a little bit more fragile. But other than that, no, they all get the same exam. I mean, we're doing a full comprehensive exam. So we're asking them questions about behavior. So that kind of gives me an idea. But when I'm watching my patients, I'm looking to see, do they look a little bobbly? Are they kind of staring off into space? Are they engaged? Are they interested in what's going on? And so if I see a dog that's just kind of flat, I might start asking them about questions that are leading to cognitive dysfunction.
So switching gears a little bit, you've mentioned food and nutrition a number of times. You have a senior or a geriatric pet in your exam room, and the owners are looking for something that they can be doing to support this pet. What does that look like for you? Is it providing guidelines for feeding? Is it recommending supplements or how exactly would you approach and make recommendations for an owner that is looking to give their senior or their geriatric the best quality of life for whatever the amount of time is that they have left?
In my opinion, the best food is going to be a fresh whole food diet. And I understand that there are some people who can't either afford to do that. And when I say afford, I don't just mean, you know, money. I'm also talking about time. And so, you know, we work with our clients to be able to get to a place where they have the time and the finances and that works within what they feel is an appropriate diet for their dogs or cats. But again, for me, I want a highly bioavailable diet. I want something that's going to be fresh and that the animal is obviously going to be interested in eating. We do take into account, do we have any kind of organ dysfunction like kidney or liver, especially? You know, I am a huge supporter of nutritional supplements. My preference is going to be for whole food supplements. And if I do other supplements that aren't whole food, I will use pharmaceutical grade ones. And I'm really fussy about which products that I will use. For my dogs that have more severe problems, I want to make sure that their organ systems have the appropriate, you know, nutritional factors to help support that function. But I will then also reach for, in my hands, Chinese herbs that I will use. For me, the Chinese herbs are stronger in a lot of ways. And so that's how I treat my animals. But if there's a practitioner that is not, either trained in herbology or doesn't believe in herbology, then there's a lot of wonderful supplements that are out in the market. You just have to be really careful which ones you use, because, you know, doing the Google search is not always going to provide you with the optimal supplements, because they are not regulated by the FDA. So you have to be careful. And I do a lot of studying and research into what products I'm using. So I'm very comfortable with what I use. And over the years, I have a, you know, a nice facility with them now.
Do you have to be more cautious? You've mentioned using the Chinese herbs. Do you have to be more cautious, or do you approach the recommending those herbs with the seniors and the geriatrics in a different way than you do with the younger animals? Are they more sensitive, I guess, is maybe what my question is.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily tied to age. I think it's an individual thing. So, for example, I have had some younger dogs that just do not have a good gastrointestinal system. And, you know, you practically look at them cross-eyed and they'll get diarrhea, right? Those are the dogs that we have to work on strengthening the gastrointestinal system before we can really do a lot of things. I have plenty of senior and geriatric dogs that I can put on like crazy stuff. Like my own dogs are considered senior and geriatric, and I can do a high dose of Chinese herbs and multiple formulas on them without having gastrointestinal results, negative gastrointestinal effects, but I also get strong positive results. So it really is an individual basis. Again, you know, age is not necessarily a disease, right? It just really depends upon how age has impacted your body, because what has, you know, what are the conditions that you've been, you know, raised with. So I would say Chinese herbs, I do consider medicine, and so I have to be careful anytime I prescribe them for young dogs, young cats, or, you know, my geriatrics, just because they do function like medicines in my hand, and that's how they're meant to be used.
I think one of the most common questions or comments that I get, having worked in the veterinary industry for over 20 years, is how do you euthanize an animal? And so often the question will come, how do you know when it's time? How do you know, or what is the advice that you provide? Since we're on this topic of seniors and geriatric animals, what is the advice that you provide for a pet owner that is trying to make that decision or trying to decide when is the appropriate time to let them go? Do you have some, like, some guidelines or words of wisdom to share?
Well, I tell my clients when to euthanize, there's a continuum. And to me, it is the most valuable gift that we have, that we are able to do for our animals. Some states it is not legal for assisted suicide. And I've seen, you know, my own family members, in all honesty, if they were a patient of mine, I would have euthanized. And it's very frustrating that, you know, we can't help our humans with that when that is their choice. But for our animals that are under our care and guidance, it is the greatest gift that we can give them, is to end their suffering and to let them die with dignity. But to me, there's a continuum, and it's a personal decision. It's based on each individual animal, and it's also based on the people involved, because the humans are a huge factor. In some cases, you know, you might have a client that is physically, emotionally, and time-wise is unable to tend to a dog or cat that really is quite ill, that really needs a lot of time, energy, and emotional attention. And so my feeling is I have to consider that as well. And so it may be sooner for one person than it is for somebody else. But in my mind, there's always a continuum where I feel that that's appropriate. And so I'm lucky that I have the option to say, no, I'm not comfortable doing it if I felt it was too early, or maybe push somebody further on if it's too late. I will say that I am very grateful that I have never had to tell a client that, in my opinion, that it's too soon. But as I said, I think you have to consider the other factors, and the human factor is huge. So I tell people, it's like, if they're having more bad moments than good, if you think of three or four things that you feel give your animal a good quality of life, and this is going to be a contract. So your whole family has to come together and come, you know, and create this list. And when those things are gone, then that's when it's time for you to have your animal, you know, help them move over the rainbow bridge, so to speak. And so some people will say it's one thing, and that's okay. And some people say it's really three things. I'm like, okay, it's your decision, but you all have to sign that contract. And when you have that tick mark, tick, 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 then that's when you have to, that's when the decision's been made for you. Although it's a very difficult decision, I respect that it is per individual. I would say that there are some animals, some dogs that maybe are fine being immobile. And then there are other dogs that, oh my gosh, you know, if you can't go for that run every day or even for a walk, that would be a horrendous life for them. So again, individual, case by case basis.
I think that's so wise. And it makes me feel better to hear you say that, because like I said, I get asked that question all the time. When is the appropriate time? And I have always told them that when your pet is having more bad days than good, then maybe it's time to start having that conversation and making some decisions. But I 100% agree with you that I really feel it is a blessing that we have that ability to make that decision for our animals and save them their dignity and, you know, to send them to a happier place before, because so often some of the last memories that we have are those last times. And I personally would prefer to remember my pets at least having good days yet, instead of every day being absolutely horrible. So I don't want to end this on a sad note. So before we wrap this up today, any words of wisdom, any final thoughts that you would have for veterinarians or veterinary staff out there when it comes to working with the seniors and the geriatrics?
Absolutely. I would say relish the ability to work with these guys, right? Because they've lived wonderful long lives, and they still have a lot to teach us and to teach their human family. I mean, for me, I have learned so much just seeing a multitude of older patients. I mean, initially I was like, I want to work with young animals because like it's so fun to work with like these key diseases that we learn about in vet school. But the reality is to be able to provide a better quality of life and, you know, hopefully a longer but good quality of life to our older companions is just such an incredible gift. I mean, I know for me, I get my dogs trained and I don't want them to ever go. And puppies are fine, don't get me wrong, but oh my gosh, my older dogs, I mean, everything's predictable. It's so much easier. And so to be able to extend their lives and to keep them healthy and vital and vibrant is just such a gift. So again, you know, nutrition is at the, you know, absolute, you know, rock bottom. I mean, you have to have a good nutritional plan, and then don't hesitate to use our supplements appropriately. And if you are a veterinarian that does not do alternative, but your clients are interested in that, don't hesitate to either reach out to your colleagues that do integrative or holistic veterinary medicine. Don't hesitate to refer to us. I love my Western colleagues, and I'm forever grateful to them that for all the amazing stuff that they do, and especially for the referrals. So again, age is not a disease. Embrace, you know, your animals as they get older, because they know us better and they understand us better. Puppies are fun, kittens are fun, but our older animals, you know, they understand us and they know us.
Those are incredible words of wisdom. I so appreciate you being here with us today, Dr. Yamate. Such great information. And I know that I'm definitely coming away from this, maybe not dreading my dogs getting old, because it warms my heart to know that there are veterinarians that are loving working with our seniors and our geriatrics. And so I so appreciate you taking time to spend some time with us today.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you, Jody.
For more education focused on holistic veterinary care, visit holisticmatters.com for articles grounded in the expertise of veterinary professionals. That's holistic with a W.